Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Power Word Talk. I am Tal Aviaser from Cast Party, and I'm joined today by Chris Premus, American game designer, writer, and founder of Green Ronin Publishing. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show today and talk to us about all things Green Ronin. We really appreciate it.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
The listeners of Power Word Talk span a broad range of folks, from people who are well familiar with Green Ronin from years and years back, and some of whom will probably have had their first exposure to Green Ronin through the actual play series that we've been running over the past few months. Chris, just to let you know where our listeners are in terms of what they've already heard from us, we are in the midst of running a series of actual play episodes using different iterations of the adventure game engine in different settings. So by the time they hear this, the listeners have heard us play through an adventure of the Expanse role-playing game, where we ran To Sleep Perchance to Dream, which is the adventure in the core rulebook. They will have also heard us run Fantasy Age series using Set Sail from Breakwater Bay, again, the adventure that is in the Fantasy Age second edition book. We have played and recorded and are currently working in post-production on the Dragon Age series, which uses the adventure in Arl's Ransom from the Dragon Age Quick Start set. So everybody at this point should have some familiarity with how this system works, but may not know that much about Green Ronin. I believe, Chris, that Green Ronin's been around for 25, 26 years now. Is that correct?
26. We celebrated our 25th anniversary last year.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about how things first got started back in 2000, how Green Ronin came to be?
Sure. So I started my game industry journey in 1993. I started to get work as a freelance writer, and I did that for a few years, worked on a bunch of different games. And then I started my first company, which was called Ronin Publishing, and we published a game called The Whispering Vault. But that company was underfunded, and we just had a lot of difficulties, though it was a learning experience on do's and don'ts in running a tabletop game company. So in 1998, I was hired at Wizards of the Coast into what was first called the TSR Product Group. And then it just became role-playing R&D. So I wrote several D&D books, one alternate book, and then Wizards started a miniatures division, and I love miniatures games. So I moved over to that new division and created a whole D&D setting where the D&D chainmail game took place. And it was while I was working on that that I started feeling like, you know, kind of want to keep my finger in the role-playing pie, as it were. So I started thinking about just a little side project originally to publish our first game, which was Orc, the role-playing game. It's a beer and pretzels RPG. A lot of fun. But then I was at Wizards when all the discussions about the open game license and the D20 trademark license and all that stuff was going on. And one of the notions at Wizards was that, well, we have a hard time doing short adventures profitably, so wouldn't it be great if other companies would do that for us, more or less? So I was like, well, hey, I'm starting this company, and I could certainly, you know, write a short adventure. And so Gen Con 2000 is when the third edition D&D Player's Handbook came out. And same day, we had an adventure I wrote called Death in Freeport. And that is the thing that, like, put us on the map. Because at that Gen Con, you could buy Death in Freeport and you could buy 3 Days to Kill by John Tynes from Atlas Games. So we were, you know, the pioneers in the whole D20 thing, which took off. So, yeah, we went from being a what company now to, you know, 2001, we were going great guns. So, it really helped to kind of catapult us forward. And then 2002, I got caught in one of the layoffs after the Hasbro buyout. So I just stepped into doing this full time. There have been a couple periods where I've worked on video games as well as running Green Ronin, but last time I did that was 2011. So it's it's mostly been Green Ronin all the time.
I know you were at Wizards of the Coast, you know, kind of during the the early part of the third edition era, the TTRPG space, the creator space, is like a really small world. And I know there's been on again, off again relationship between Green Ronin and Wizards of the Coast since then. I think Jeremy Crawford at one point worked for Green Ronin, right? He developed Blue Rose. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, actually, I gave Jeremy his first work in the game industry.
Awesome.
So, yeah, we were doing the Blue Rose RPG, the original version, which was back in 2005. And Jeremy came in to edit it initially, but the game needed a lot of development. So ultimately, he and Steve Kenson worked together to make it into a full and proper game. So,
and then early in the 5e era, Wizards wasn't doing like all of their source books and large hardcover campaign length adventure books in-house, right? And I believe that Green Ronin did work for Wizards of the Coast then too. Is it Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide that you folks did?
We did two books, Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide and then Out of the Abyss.
Out of the Abyss, right.
One of those
right,
big
right.
adventures, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Chris has, you know, done it all and seen it all. In the past 30 years or so, the feasts and the famines of the TTRPG space.
That's for sure.
But always a lot of amazing stuff and surprises and creativity happening as well. It's never boring. It's been such a wonderful opportunity for us to work with Green Ronin on this series and to have the opportunity to play in some of the worlds that you folks have given us access to, like Dragon Age and The Expanse. I've been calling it the adventure game engine. Is it also sort of informally called the age system? Is that fair enough? Okay. And the three iterations of it that we've used on the show. And I will preface this by saying, had I been more familiar with the systems, I definitely would have done our games in the opposite order in which we played them. So we started with The Expanse, and then we got to Fantasy Age, and then Dragon Age, which was sort of the systems got more mechanically simple as we went on.
Yeah, you did them in reverse order of release.
Yep. We jumped in at the deep end and then paddled up into the easier area.
Yeah.
But, you know, by the time we got to Dragon Age, I was like, oh, I got this covered. I know that the system was initially developed to support Dragon Age. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Can you talk about the original design ideas behind the Dragon Age system? Like, was that an attempt to recreate the Dragon Age Origins video experience, like to try to translate that to a TTRPG? Was that something that was like first and foremost in your head as a designer?
Well, certainly. I mean, I wanted to give people that feel. Mm-hmm. For me, the big opportunity of Dragon Age was that I wanted to show computer game people what was cool about tabletop role-playing game. Mm-hmm. Right. So I designed the age system as something that new people could get into pretty easily. And when we first did it, it was a series of box sets, harkening back to old D&D basic box sets. So set one, it was a player's book, a GM's book, a map, and dice. So you could have that and you could play right out of the box. And that covered the first five levels. Then we did sets two and three, which took it up to 20. Yeah, my notion was that this was a great opportunity to bring people into role-playing games without having them detour into D&D first.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because for long years, most companies were content to let D&D do the acquisition. Mm-hmm. And then try to capitalize on that by offering them different games and things. And so I felt like, well, I could just skip the part where they play D&D first and you know, bring them right into Dragon Age, into a world, you know, setting that they knew already from the video game.
I will say, just I want to jump ahead a little bit to The Expanse, but that has been an interesting experience for us with The Expanse, because a listenership has come in for us that are not previously in the TTRPG space, mm-hmm. maybe more so than any other setting or IP that we've worked with on the show. We've been around for 5 or 6 years now. We've done a bunch of different games, but this has folks that are sort of migrating directly from the Expanse fandom into the TTRPG space. And I can see that was, you know, also probably a big part of what you were doing with Dragon Age. You know, the idea that that all roads don't have to come through D&D Beyond.
Yeah, exactly. So
Dragon Age, the game series, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the TTRPG that you developed, this would be in the Dragon Age Origins era, right? like before the latter games or maybe during the second one?
No, it was actually, I started before the first game was even out.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Yeah, it was actually unusual because normally in licensed games, we go to the licensor and pitch them on doing a tabletop game. Dragon Age, BioWare actually came to us.
Oh, wow.
Because during the years where we were doing a lot of D20 source books, so basically like third edition D&D compatible stuff, there were people, including at least one of the founders of BioWare, who really liked the stuff that we did. So, yeah, they reached out to us. They were like, hey, we're doing a spiritual successor to Baldur's Gate.
Uh-huh.
And we think it'd be like a cool nod to the roots to have a TTRPG to go with it. Would you be interested? And that was like the quickest decision I've ever made in my life. So it's like, yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And then I guess the child of Dragon Age is Fantasy Age in a way, mm-hmm. right? You sort of took the bones of the system that you developed for Dragon Age and applied them to Green Ronin's own setting, mm-hmm. and then expanded the system. Can you talk a little bit about like the how and when of that coming to pass?
Yeah. As soon as we put Dragon Age out, we had people being like, oh, I really like this system, but I don't really care much about the Dragon Age world of Thedas. And so they were interested to know if we're going to do something else with it. And we were talking around various ideas. We pitched and started to work on a game called Eldritch Age, which was meant to be, you know, a whole new world, standalone game sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But then an opportunity came up that I couldn't very well say no to. And that was through Will Wheaton, who I had gotten to know through my late friend, Andrew Hackard, a great guy, sadly no longer with us. Will did the tabletop TV show, and he asked me to run Dragon Age on the last two episodes of season one.
Those shows, by the way, if any folks would like to dig them up, you can find them if you'd like to see Chris running Dragon Age with Will Wheaton. It's out there.
Yeah, it was fun. So after that, Geek and Sundry, they did a crowdfunder to do more stuff like that. And their like $1 million stretch goal was, oh, we'll do an RPG show specifically. So they hit that goal and Will called me and basically asked if I wanted to work on that with him. And I had thought it was going to be like tabletop, where like each episode would feature a different game. But what he actually wanted to do was run a single campaign over 10 episodes, right? So he wanted to know essentially if I could create a non-Dragon Age version of the rules. And then we did some brainstorming about a setting, and Will and I and his son Ryan created this science fantasy setting called Titan's Grave. This all came together over the course of not even a year.
I was going to say that sounds like a compressed time period to develop all of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was working on the game. We hired people to work on the adventures, and I wrote one of those and did all the development work on that. So, you know, that basically started in like January. I want to say that was 2014, I think. And we had to shoot the show in like April. So I was literally still working on the adventures during the shoot. So wow. I was like watching what was happening live, but also I was finishing development work on the adventure for the next day. So wow. It was really like skin of the teeth type stuff. Then we had to have the Titan's Grave world and adventure book and Fantasy Age basic rule book out for Gen Con in August. So it was crazy year, I will say.
That is amazing. We've talked a lot about on this show in the past about the way that working in the TTRPG space, even just GMing, even if you're just running games for the same group of people weekly, it engenders the idea of being creative on a deadline. Mm-hmm. And God, is that an example of that? Having to pull all of that together in that time frame is mind boggling.
Yeah, I don't recommend it.
Having said that, Fantasy Age should give you the opportunity to kind of expand and add stuff to Dragon Age. Can you talk about some of the mechanics that ultimately ended up in Fantasy Age as an evolution of Dragon Age?
Well, so because Fantasy Age was done so quickly, and the way we did it with a rule book and then the Titan's Grave book as like separate things, uh-huh. the first edition of Fantasy Age is largely just a distillation of Dragon Age. Mm-hmm. But I did take the opportunity to make some changes. So like in Dragon Age, your ability to hit things with like missile weapons and melee were tied to basic ability scores. Mm-hmm. So like strength for most weapons and dexterity for missile weapons. And, right. You know,
Dex also, D&D.
Yeah, it was very easy to, or too easy, I felt, to just put a lot of points into raising those abilities and having an outsized effect. So that's when I split some of the abilities into two. So that's when we added... God, my fucking brain. Oops, sorry.
No, that's fine.
It's an R-rated show.
Yeah, we can say fuck on the show. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. So that's when I added separate abilities for your skill with, you know, ranged attacks and melee attacks, things like that. Yeah. You know, the magic system, Dragon Age worked in a specific way that matched the way it was on the show. Mm-hmm. I turned that into a more generic system for Fantasy Age. And initially, the notion was that this was a magic system, but didn't need to be the magic system. Mm-hmm. Like, we could expand it to cover other things. And then we ended up doing that when we did Blue Rose. So Blue Rose introduced like a psychic system because it's got psychic powers and psychic animals in it. And that was an adaptation of the Fantasy Age rules also.
And then the second edition of Fantasy Age introduces many more ancestries, many more species, you know, that the players can be, and also a new character class, the Envoy.
Yes, correct. Yeah, we decided we wanted to add a fourth option, first of all, to have a, you know, kind of a role-playing focused class, mm-hmm. like, you know, you're the face man, you're the fixer. And also, because four players is like an average amount, it's nice.
Everyone has their own.
Everyone has their own class.
Yeah. It's my favorite class, by the way. So thank you for adding it.
Excellent. Good. Yeah. So with second edition, basically, every time we did an age game, we would customize it for whatever genre or property it was part of. And that inevitably led to the creation of new mechanics and different subsystems and things like that. So by the time we were working on second edition Fantasy Age, we had done Blue Rose, we had done Modern Age, and the Expanse. So there were the things we did in the Expanse, like the fortune system, mm-hmm. you know, that got added to Fantasy Age as an optional rule. We also had to create new things for the Expanse, like spaceship combat rules, which we had never had a need for because we hadn't done a sci-fi setting.
I'm glad you mentioned the fortune, which for those who've heard our playthrough will know that it's a kind of meta currency that both represents, in a way, your hit points, but in a broader sense, your fortune, your luck. So you can use it to turn failures into successes, but it's a resource mm-hmm. that needs to be managed. It's an interesting risk-reward mechanic. Those of you who've heard the actual play, I've heard players really go for broke and dump a whole bunch of fortune into what they felt were critical moments and then mm-hmm. find themselves in a very vulnerable position. So it was a great engine for creating drama for us. Was the Expanse the first iteration of the age system that used fortune?
Yes.
And how did that come into the game? Like what made you think of adding a mechanic like that?
So it was Steve Kenson who designed the fortune system. Mm. He basically was looking at the Expanse and like things that could happen in it and things that happened in the novels. For example, like in the first book, there's a very short-lived character. I think he was a doctor or something like that.
Oh, Shep.
Yes, Shep. Yeah. And during their various escapades, a PDC round, which is like a giant tungsten slug, punches through the ship and goes through him. And so like a hit point system you know, just didn't feel right. You know, essentially like you're lucky and you didn't get hit by
tungsten slug,
you know.
Yeah, and I'm glad you say that because that was a mental adjustment for me. You know, having done a lot of years and years of actual play DMing for Dungeons and Dragons and Dungeons and Dragons adjacent games, like we've done some work with EN Publishing and their Level Up A5E system. Mm-hmm. The way that we describe combat, when people were losing fortune, I was describing them, you know, getting shot, their suits being punctured. The first combat we ever did, I did that. And then I looked at it and I said, it's quite wrong. They're spending fortune so as not to have that happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of only when they're out of fortune and they take the wounded or injured condition, now they're getting shot.
That's right.
Now Shep's head is getting blown through the wall.
Yeah.
He's run out of luck, essentially. The grim hand of fate has caught up to him. So it was an interesting, a welcome, I think, adjustment for me to make. And it also has the effect, I think, of making, you know, in some ways, a heroic situation. We're used to characters in The Expanse, in adventure shows, narrowly avoiding death and dismemberment by the skin of their teeth.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I kind of wish it was just the main system in Fantasy Age now. Mm-hmm. But because, you know, the whole game up to that point had used health, I didn't want to just wholesale change it in the second edition. Mm-hmm. So we put in fortune as an option. But it's an option I recommend. If you're
gonna Yeah, very much so. So this is a maybe unfairly broad and weighted question. But
yeah,
if you had to say this is the design goal of the Age system, or this is the experience I hope people have playing this system at their table that maybe sets it apart from other TTRPG systems. Not to denigrate other TTRPG systems, there's a million awesome systems out there, but like, if you had to say, this is what is the hallmark of it, or what makes it special, or what I really wanted players and GMs to feel when they were running this. And I'm sorry to throw that one at you, but, but take a shot. Well,
we haven't talked about the stunt system yet.
Yeah.
And that's really like the key feature of the Age system. That was the thing that really set Dragon Age and the subsequent games apart from other games. Part of it is the way it works, where, you know, you generate stunt points and then you've got like a menu of things that you can do, with the notion that for the most part, you're going to be generating and spending these points right away. Mm-hmm. It's not like a long term resource that you're tracking. It's like, get it. Use it.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Which is a wonderful mechanic, because, for example, you might be sitting on something in D&D like a bardic inspiration, waiting for the perfect moment to come up during the next 10 minutes when it should be used. And it probably won't. Yeah. And you'll never use it.
Yeah.
And this sort of relieves that I'm banking this, hoping that I use it at the optimum time. It's like, no, you're using it now. It's fun and exciting right now, and then the moment will be gone.
Other thing that the stunt system, it just makes scenes more interesting and lively, because Age system runs off of 3d6, right? That you add together, you add an ability, and try to hit a target number. That's the basics of it. If you're playing a d20-based system and you have a critical hit on a 20, well, that's 5% of the time.
Right.
So it's like, they happen, but not that often. Mm-hmm. But the notion of the stunt system was like, well, your odds of rolling doubles on any of 3d6, you know, is like 45% or something like that. So that means stunts are popping off all the time.
Yeah.
And it lets you just do more like cool, funky things than just like, I swing, I hit, I do damage, you know.
Yeah. There are likely to be stunts coming into play more than once per encounter. As opposed you could sit and play a 4-hour session of D&D, for example, and maybe you'd crit once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, that was, you know, part of what I was trying to create there was something that was more lively and gave you choices. That was one of my goals with the stunt system. Like, it started as kind of like a dynamic critical hit system, because initially I just designed combat stunts for it. Mm-hmm. Then during the playtest of Dragon Age, the spellcasters were like, oh, we'd really love to have some spell stunts. Mm. And at first I was like, well, I mean, you're already casting spells and using magic. Like, that's not special enough for you.
Right.
but they were like, oh, no, stunts are so cool. And I was like, okay, you know. So we did spell stunts. And when the first box set came out for Dragon Age, it was only those two types of stunts. Mm-hmm. But then we started hearing from people who, you know, they wanted stunts in other sorts of encounters. And that's what ultimately led to, you know, role-playing stunts and exploration stunts. And then as these systems have evolved over games, we've added a bunch of different kinds. Chase stunts, there's spaceship combat stunts, you know, all kinds of stuff.
For me, it was like dream come true to work in both the Dragon Age world and the Expanse world, because these are both settings, IPs, franchises, whatever you would like to call them, stories that I've been involved with as a fan for years and years. I'm curious for the Expanse how the partnership with James S.A. Corey, James S.A. Corey is a nom de plume of two gentlemen, Daniel Abraham and Ty Frank. How did that connection happen for Green Ronin?
Well, it actually involves Game of Thrones. I think it was 2008, we published a Game of Thrones role-playing game called A Song of Ice and Fire role-playing game. And that had happened because I had simply cold emailed George R. R. Martin and was like, hey, how about it? And so we were able to work on a deal for that. The trouble we had there is that, so initially it was before the TV show, but over the course of that game, the TV show happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, George is always busy. And then he just got insanely busy once the TV show started. So we were not able to reliably put out support for that game because it might take us a year to get a book like finished and approved for release. And, you know, on George R. R. Martin's to-do list, read and approve role-playing game was like pretty low. And like rightly so if you're him. So at a certain point he realized that he needed some help, and so he hired Ty Frank to run his business. And at that point Ty became the person that we would send in approval stuff to, and it was a much better system for us to get things finished. And along the way, you know, I got to know Ty and we worked well together. And then I started reading the Expanse books and I really liked them. But by the time I was thinking about maybe pitching an RPG to him, that TV show had started. And I was like, oh, well, there's no way we're going to get the license now. But then, like, he was on Twitter, he and Daniel, and they basically wanted to know what companies might be interested in doing a TTRPG for The Expanse.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, oh, well, okay. So, you know, I pitched us, other companies threw their hats in the rings, Monte Cook Games, some other people, and they decided to go with us. And I think a big part of it was the fact that Ty knew us and we had worked together successfully already on a role-playing game. It was like an easy choice for him. It's like, you know, I know the deal with these people. So yeah, that's basically how that happened.
Once that partnership was forged, can you tell us a little bit about the process of working with them to create the book?
Basically, you know, we would do a draft. If we had some specific questions about things, you know, we could ask them. Then when we had something together, you know, we would send it off for their approval. And, you know, they too were dealing with a novel series and a TV show. Yeah. But, you know, we've been able to get a goodly amount of Expanse things out through there. So, I mean, it's really been pretty low key, to be honest. And over time, you know, they've come to trust us.
Sure.
And so their approvals come faster these days because they're essentially like, well, you guys know what you're doing.
Yeah, they are, or at least were, maybe still are, TTRPG gamers. I know that.
They are.
Yeah. The Expanse, in its nascency, I think The Expanse was going to be a lot of things at a lot of different times. It was going to be a video game. And I think the initial sort of inception of it was like a play-by-post TTRPG that they were playing, at least the first novel.
The way it happened, there's a first step that most people don't know, which is that the initial pitch for The Expanse was something that Ty put together for a Chinese, like, I think they were a telephone company.
Oh, wow.
Maybe not telephone. Anyway, it was for an MMO. It was basically a pitch as a setting for an MMO. So we did all this work putting this setting together, and then that didn't go anywhere. So at that point, he was like, well, what the hell? I might as well just run a role-playing game with this material. So this must have been 2003 or 4, maybe. So they used the D20 Modern game from Wizards and modified that for sci-fi, and then that's how they started their campaign. But both Ty and Daniel have deep roots in role-playing games. When we did the initial quick start for The Expanse, Daniel ran it for members of the cast when they were shooting of the seasons.
That's amazing. I also would say, if you're an Expanse completionist, there is an original short story, Expanse short story by James S. A. Corey, that is included in The Expanse RPG Core Rules. It's quite good and unavailable anyplace else.
Yeah.
So if you are somebody that wants to read everything that James S. A. Corey has written set in the Expanse universe, you will need to get the Expanse Core Rulebook to get that missing piece.
Yeah. Yeah, and I will say that in that original edition of the game was a crowdfunding campaign. Mm. Then we have a new version coming out later this year called the Transport Union Edition.
Yes, I am a proud backer of that second Kickstarter. I've got some of the material already. It's great.
Yeah. And so Ty and Daniel are actually great for the Kickstarter because they were willing to do things that other authors would not do. You know, yeah. So first of all, writing that short story. But they did a thing. We had a level for, I don't remember what it was, 15 or 20 people where, you know, they paid like many hundreds of dollars, but they would write like a piece of microfiction about the character of that person. Mm. So, you know, the person could say like, well, here's my character concept. And they would write, I forget what it was, like 200 words or 250 words, something like that. But it's like, what author does that for role-playing games, right?
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. But before you go, I was wondering if you could tell us anything about any upcoming Green Ronin products or happenings that the people should know about.
Yes. The first thing I want to mention, because it's happening right now, is we are running a Kickstarter for the fourth edition of Mutants and Masterminds. We didn't really talk about that because it's not an age system game. Mm-hmm. Mutants and Masterminds is our oldest still going game. First edition of that came out in 2002. We got a fourth edition up now. The campaign's doing well. We'd love to get some people who haven't tried it before or interested in a superhero game to go check that out. So look for Mutants and Masterminds 4th edition. So yes, that's the big thing that's happening right now. Also, we have just sent to print the 5th season role-playing game, which is another literary license. So that is based on the Broken Earth trilogy by N.K. Jemisin. And that is another iteration of the age system. And it too has some unique things about it. One of the whole things about that setting, the stillness, is the community is kind of the focus of things. Because every once in a while, like Father Earth, who hates humanity, sends a different and new horrible natural disaster to kill people. So you spend a lot of time preparing for essentially like the next apocalypse. So there's a whole system where you as a group, you create a community, and then there's roles within that community for your characters. So you can have individual goals, but also, you know, your focus is like what's good for the community. It's a different point of view than a lot of role playing games.
I'm deeply intrigued by that. I'm going to have to check it out myself, but thank you for sharing that with me.
So the PDF of that is available now. We'll have the print version in a few months. And then later this year, we'll have the print edition of the Expanse Transport Union Edition. And we've got some Expanse miniatures that are coming along with that.
And a new sort of campaign length adventure as well, right? That covers higher levels of play.
Yeah. So there were three other books that were part of that crowdfunding campaign. So there's the Crew Companion, which is the first sort of like players oriented book we've done for the Expanse. Mm-hmm. And then we have Damon's Gambit,
right,
which is was a new adventure series. And then we also have the Free Navy Conflict, if you want to play during the era of Marco Sanaros, right, and his friends.
Right. And who wouldn't?
Mass murdering friends. Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today, Chris. We really appreciate it. I hope that everyone checks out all of Green Ronin's amazing products that we talked about. And we will be back in 2 weeks from today, from the time that you're hearing this, with the first episode of Podcast Party Dragon Age. So you will get to hear the system that started all of the age systems and evolution that has followed. We'll finally be getting to the first thing last.
Nice.
Thank you so much, Chris. I really appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Take care.